I always get a little nervous before I speak, and I know if you come here expecting Reverend Sylvia, it's always hard to find that she's not here, but I figured today it is so hot and miserable out there that, you know, even if I'm terrible, how bad can it be? It's air conditioned. So please turn to your neighbor and tell them, I see you through God's eyes. And then turn back and tell them, and you look marvelous. Things look a little different when we look through God's eyes, don't they? If I'm feeling a little cranky and I have my ego glasses on, I might turn to my neighbor and think, you know, that's not a really good color on her. But when I put my God glasses on, all I see is her spirit, her essence, and the God who is within. Seeing life through God's eyes means living with an open heart. It means seeing through the eyes of compassion, of mercy, of forgiveness, and of love. One of my favorite lines in the St. Francis prayer is, help me to seek to understand rather than be understood. Because the ego is always saying, you don't understand me, that's not what I meant. But if we're trying to come from a godly perspective, our reaction is more like, what are you trying to tell me? What am I not hearing? But the ego is always looking for a fight. The ego prefers to be in a defensive posture because it feels safer that way. Because if we were to listen as God would have us listen, we might have to get real. We might hear something that hurts even, but something that ultimately could bring us closer to the truth. God's view is often quite different from our view. 1 Samuel 16, verse 7 says, for God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Man looks at the outward appearance, the Lord looks at the heart. The spiritual teacher Marianne Williamson writes a lot about the ego mind, and she says the ego mind both professes its desire for love and then does everything possible to repel it. And then if it does manage to get here anyway, to sabotage it. She also says the ego thinks, once everything falls into place, I will feel at peace. The spirit says, find your peace and everything will fall into place. There's a line I love that says, we don't see the world as it is, we see it as we are. We never see the world as it is. We see it through our lens, through our perspective. If I'm basically a fearful person, any change in plans or a new opportunity is going to scare me. If I'm an angry person, there will be no end to the things that will really irritate me. But if I'm basically a positive person, I will think that everything will ultimately turn out for the best. If I'm a trusting person, I'm going to think that most people are on my side. And as truth students, we know that we will get what we expect to get, right? Now, probably no one here has experienced this, but just in case, has anyone ever had someone say or do something that really bugged them, and then it was over, but you found yourself going over and over it in your head days later? Anyone ever have that experience? For me, it will come up when I'm brushing my teeth or walking the dog, and I'm thinking, I can't believe she said that. It was so rude. And then I'll start listing all her character flaws, everything wrong with her. It's like an old tape that keeps going over again and again in my head. This is not seeing something as God would have me see it. This is the ego acting like a dog with a bone he will not give up. The spiritual writer Emmett Fox writes about this in an essay called Bear Hugs Kettle. And he tells a story about some campers who let a pot of water boiling over a campfire and walked away. And a bear came and he grabbed the kettle. And it was hot and it scalded him. But instead of letting go, he just held on more tightly. And it was a vicious cycle. The hotter it got and the more it hurt, the tighter he hugged it to him. And Fox says, that's what we do when something has bothered us, and then we rehearse it over and over in our minds. And he says, the next time we do that, we immediately think bear hugs kettle and think about God instead. A book I love that talks about this is called The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Singer says, when something happens and it really gets to you, that instead of mentally grabbing onto it and letting it wear a groove in your mind, you release. His line is, relax and release, relax and release. And as you heard, I have a 14-year-old son. I'm going to have that tattooed on my arm. Relax and release. He says that as soon as you feel that tension start inside, that tightening start, that's your cue that it's time to grow and relax and release. He writes that if you keep doing this, you will get conscious enough that the minute you feel that energy start to get a little funky, you release. He says it's called letting go. When you let go, you are falling behind the energy that is trying to pull you into it. And I love that image, falling behind the energy. And I think of that a lot when I start to get triggered. I try to drop back, to move behind it, and to not get carried away. For example, I was recently at a very large conference, and there were hundreds of people trying to get, we were in one room and the session ended, and we were all trying to get to the next room, and this woman was trying to push past me. So I did what any insane person would do, and I started to block her. Like I'm a football player or something, right? And just as I started to say, ma'am, we're all trying to get to the same place, I thought, release, relax and release, relax and release. So then I tripped her. Just kidding, joke, 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 joke. Actually, I let go, and this is really important. I changed my focus. I took it off of her. I turned to something else. I thought about God. I thank God that I was able to be at that conference to hear the speakers and learn from it, and I released. Singer says it's our natural tendency to focus on the disturbance because that's where our minds go. That's where our ego goes. But if we shift our perspective and see it through God's eyes, we can choose to focus on something that makes us feel great because it's always a choice. We always have the choice what we focus on. At that same conference, I happened to be with two friends, and one friend was just miserable, complaining the whole day, saying, you know, there are too many people here. They didn't plan properly for this. They're not organized. They don't have it set up right, and on and on. And the other friend was saying, you know, I think they probably didn't expect this many people, and I know they must be doing the best they can, and I wonder if they need any help. Both women attending the same conference, but with two totally different perspectives. One was coming from the ego mind, which is the judgment and the blame, and the other was trying to focus on the good. And we know that what we focus on expands. What we focus on, we will get more of. And when we give our energy to those negative feelings, we give them more power and they grow. But if instead we relax and release, the gift is we become free. Now let's contrast that approach to how I was on a plane a few months back. It was one of those very small planes. We all had connections we had to make, and the plane was running late. So we're all in a hurry. It lands. We're grabbing our belongings, and I was in the next to last seat. And when it was my turn, I started to step out into the aisle, and this couple behind me pushed past and said, we have a plane to catch. So So we start up the aisle, and of course we're all together because where are we going to go, right? And I'm in my mind fuming and fussing. And then as soon as we get off the plane, we have to stand there because our bags are stowed underneath and we have to wait. So I'm standing there with my new best friends. And I said, because you knew I was going to say something, right? Yeah. I said, well, I guess we all ended up at the same place. Now contrast that to what would have been a healthier option, which would be to immediately relax and release, to say, dear God, bless them, heal me, and think of something else. Think of my blessings on the fact I have two legs and can walk off this plane, that I'm going someplace else, on how good God is. I just have to make the choice to change my focus. Singer gives us the example of someone taking a pen off of our desk without asking and then walk away with it. And the ego mind starts to think, well, I need to say something because, you know, today it might be a pen, but then tomorrow, what if he wants my office or my car or my partner? And he says, that's when the God within us can say, you know, when they come for my partner, we'll talk. Right now, it just costs me a pen to be mentally free. And we relax and release, relax and release. And if we can get into the habit of doing that with the small things, then when the big things come our way, chances are we will have developed the habit of turning immediately to God and not our ego. When I'm just looking at people through my own lens, instead of trying to see my brother as God would have me see him, I get in trouble. I make assumptions, and 9 times out of 10, I am wrong. Case in point. My boss and I both drink a lot of coffee, and usually somebody comes in the office early in the morning and there's a pot going. But this one morning, we were getting ready to go into a meeting that he had called, and we go into the kitchen, and I was a little irritated with him that morning. And he said, you know, horrified, there's no coffee. And I said something like, too bad, huh? Often I would have offered, because we all take turns, but this day I didn't. So we go into his meeting, and halfway through, he has to leave to take a call. And he comes back in, and I'm not paying any attention, and he says, Catherine, and I look up, and he's tapping his coffee mug. So I jump up, and I start to go out, but I am in my ego mind, and I'm thinking, is he really asking me to get up and bring him a cup of coffee? And if he is, I'm going to have to say a few things, and I might have to say them right now. And I get right up to him, and he said, someone made a fresh pot. You can get yourself a cup. Now, if I had said any of what I had been thinking, I'd be asking Reverend Sylvia if she needed any help around the church because I would be out of a job. This is what happens when we make assumptions. When we're seeing things through the ego mind instead of through the eyes of God. If I could just slow down and trust God, I could relax. Joshua 1 verse 9 says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. I don't have to worry. My God is with me wherever I go. Here's something I'd like you to think about because I think you can relate to the feelings. I have a route from work I sometimes take, and there's a three-way stop. Now, what are you supposed to do at a three-way stop? You take turns, right? Yeah, we take turns. But you know what sometimes happens? Sometimes someone doesn't wait their turn. And do you know how I feel when it's my turn and someone steps on the gas and goes through? Well, sometimes if I'm in my ego mind, I get really angry. And I start with the horn, and I start in the head saying, you know, who do they think they are, and how can they get away with that? But in those rare times when I'm actually acting like I'm a spiritual person, you know how I feel? I guess they're in a hurry. Hope they get there safely. What a difference, right? Same event, two different reactions. I don't think God is saying, Catherine, it was your turn. I can't believe he did that. I'm thinking God didn't even notice. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. And I'd ask you to think about that scenario for just a minute and think about any time somebody may have gotten one up on you. Either they cut in front of you in line or cut you off in traffic or interrupted you at a meeting. And think how you feel. Think of how that energy starts to get twisted. And then think about what it matters. And think about what it would cost to instantly let it go and turn your thoughts to God, to relax and release, and then feel the freedom that comes with doing it that way. You know, when we are up in our heads, it's not good. There's a line that says, the mind is a dangerous neighborhood. Do not go in there alone. Ephesians 4, verses 31 through 32 says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. When we are viewing the world through the eyes of the ego, not only do we have a lot of judgment, we also want to deal out the punishment. We want to be judge, jury, and executioner. It's like a sign one of my coworkers has in her office. Dear Karma, I have a list of people I think you missed. Because we worry that somebody's not going to get theirs, right? That they won't get what's coming to them. But that's really none of our business, is it? That would be God's business, not mine. I want to share something I read in a Christian newsletter called The Epistle that really sums up what I've been trying to say. It says, while one person can see a worthless, drug-addicted bum on the street sucking up to the welfare system, Jesus sees a once promising, intelligent young man who fell on hard times and made the wrong choices. Or we can see a group of rioting protesters and think they are a bunch of lawless, uncontrollable individuals who should be incarcerated. But Jesus sees people who are frustrated because their voices are being ignored and their lives dismissed. All they want is to be recognized, treated with respect, and included into the collective community. When we see the world, we look through our perspective and judge how it will affect us personally. When Jesus sees the world, his eyes transcend time and space. He looks with eyes that see through our souls. And the article says, in order to see with the eyes of God, we first have to see God. And when we understand how God sees us, we can look at our neighbor and fully understand what God sees in each and every one of us, a precious soul. It's all about looking at life through a human perspective versus a spiritual perspective. And when we look through God's eyes, we can see that our lives are unfolding exactly as they should, and that we're being led and guided at all times. We have such a limited perspective. We can see that much of what's in front of us. But I read a great line that says, God looks at life differently. Because God is eternal, he sees the past, present, and future all at the same time. God sees the end from the beginning. I love that line. So when we don't get that job we wanted and we are so crushed, we can't see that God has something better right around the corner. when that wonderful individual who is going to be the love of our life doesn't call us back after the first date, and we have decided to give up on romance forever, we can't see what God has planned if we just have faith. Which actually reminds me of a woman in my parents' retirement community. She's 95. She's in great shape. She's had two long-term wonderful marriages, and both husbands passed. Then in the retirement community, she met someone, had a wonderful long-term relationship with him, and he recently passed, and she said, "That's it. I'm done." And I thought, you know, at 95, it's probably okay to be done. But who knows? God is funny that way. I could go back next week and she could be engaged. Life is so different when we see it from God's eyes. Everything changes. Well, actually, it's the way we see everything changes. What was so awful maybe doesn't seem so bad. And we become more grateful for the good. So this week, I would invite you to relax and release. Relax and release. And to turn your focus to God as soon as things in your head get squirrely. And then thank God for the grace to see things differently. Thank you.